93 years ago this week, a young man in Washington, D.C. got a big job.
May 10th, 1924, the day young J. Edgar Hoover became acting director.
He would take over a boring federal agency originally created to regulate buyers and sellers of oil and wheat trying to slip past regulators. But then, faced with the aftermath of the killing of President William McKinley in 1901, the country suddenly saw terrorists everywhere, and this little police force was ill-equipped. And by 1924, it was given the additional responsibility to enforce prohibition. Young J. Edgar Hoover had a free hand.
It is my belief that when a man becomes a part of this bureau, he must so conduct himself, both officially and unofficially, as to eliminate even the slightest possibility of criticism as to his conduct.
He was told, clean up this mess. And there was a mess, not only in the Bureau, but throughout the nation, where millions were revolting against the Prohibition Amendment in a mass disregard for the laws of the land.
FBI, fidelity, bravery, integrity.
What he created was part cult, part preserver of American values, all police force. Under the guise of chasing booze and bootleggers, J. Edgar Hoover made the FBI into a federal police force that would have horrified the original framers of the U.S. Constitution. It's now among the largest law enforcement agencies in the world. Hoover himself was an untouchable shadow president until his death, and his successors have all been mere shadows of that Hoover myth. The firing of James Comey reminds us of all that. In many ways, the FBI has become more than a federal police force. It's close to being a presidential police force. How that happened is the story told in G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover and the American Century, the latest project of Beverly Gage. She's a professor of 20th century American history at Yale University.
Hoover was at the FBI for 48 years. So he came in as director in 1924, and he was actually there as the assistant director even before that. But he became director at the age of 29 in 1924, and he died in that same job in 1972 at the age of 77. During that period, the FBI, like the rest of the government, went through really enormous growth. And I think that when he came to the agency, nobody saw what was going to happen. So there weren't very many mechanisms in place to kind of constrain him or provide accountability for the FBI, and he was really able to create it in his own image.
So he created a personal police force that became among the largest in the world with a huge reputation, and he did it under the guise of prohibition and other sort of scares that were going on at the same time in America. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So when he came in as director in 1924, prohibition was in full swing. And already at that point, there were plenty of people in law enforcement who were thinking, uh-oh, this is not going to be a good ride. Hoover's main concern was actually that it was going to corrupt his agents, because he looked out at other police forces and saw them taking bribes and all sorts of shenanigans. So he tried to stay out of prohibition as much as he could. But of course, prohibition also produced a huge crime wave that by the 1930s is really what brought the FBI sort of in the wake of prohibition into national prominence, when they began going after bank robbers and kidnappers in the 1930s, figures like John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd. That's really the moment that Hoover became a national figure.
And the way in which he fused that mission into popular culture and the way Hollywood embraced it, by the time we get to the 1950s and 60s, no American could imagine a United States without a Hoover-led investigative force called the FBI. Is that correct?
Hoover was absolutely this huge cultural figure and a major political influence in Washington. But everyone in the United States knew who J. Edgar Hoover was, knew what he stood for. Some people liked it and some people didn't. He was pretty popular for most of his career, which I think is hard for us to remember today, since we mostly see him as this kind of villainous figure. But he was incredibly skilled at public relations and at getting his own ideas out into the press and also, as you say, into Hollywood and into popular culture.
The civil rights movement was eventually aided by the deployment of federal agents in places in the South that were unwilling to desegregate or follow the orders of the Civil Rights Act. But for a while, Hoover resisted the civil rights movement. And, you know, that was a use of the police force to actually get in the way of freedom. How long did that last?
Yeah, the FBI had a very complicated record on civil rights in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. So Hoover died in 72. Hoover himself was really a very kind of conservative Southerner. I mean, he had been born in Washington, D.C., but he had come of age sort of in a segregationist world. And he himself, I think, really remained a product of that world. So he had lots of arguments about how and if the FBI wanted to engage in civil rights investigations. So there was a jurisdiction question before the Civil Rights Acts of the 50s and 60s. There really were questions about how federal power could be used in various crimes related to civil rights or in civil rights investigations altogether. After the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the FBI had this sort of paradoxical record in which it was pretty aggressively going after the Ku Klux Klan in the South, but it was also conducting widespread and often quite illegal surveillance operations against civil rights activists themselves. So most notably, in the early 60s, the FBI engaged in pretty widespread and really pretty outrageous campaign against Martin Luther King himself.
I'm wondering if in the absence of a Hoover character at the head of the FBI, that the agency runs the risk of becoming a presidential police force rather than a federal police force, and that someone with the, you know, personality, powerful personality of a Donald Trump could actually do what Hoover was able to do, but instead of from the bureau's office, from the White House. What do you think?
Hoover made his name in part on the claim that he was this independent, nonpartisan actor who had a lot of autonomy and could stand sort of outside of political pressures. Now, of course, for Hoover, that meant that he could kind of do what he wanted. And by the 1960s, people were beginning to think, it's probably not a great idea to have the same guy at the head of our powerful federal police force for half of a century. So in the 60s and then extending into the 70s, there were a whole new set of restrictions put in place about the FBI director's position and also what the FBI itself could do. So one of those is the 10-year limit that we now have on the FBI director. Others were things like the Freedom of Information Act, limits on FBI accountability, the intelligence committees. All of these pieces really came into place at the end of Hoover's life. And for the most part, those have obviously been incredibly beneficial. They came out of real crises about what an agency like the FBI was doing. But on the other hand, you are right that the FBI is now less of its own sort of independent institution and is probably a little more able to be buffeted by political winds as we're seeing now.
Beverly Gage is a professor of 20th century history at Yale University. She's working on a book that will tell this story, G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover and the American Century. Thanks so much.
Thank you.